Yes, we've got an absolute hero on the day. It's a box-to-box midfielder, John Higgins. How you doing, mate? All right?
Oh, bad, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks very much. You still play? Play fives or anything like that?
No, the days are far gone. No, I was lucky enough. A couple of years ago, I played here. Tommy Boyd. I met him in Bordeaux one day and he said, do you fancy playing a couple of minutes in the Legends game? And that was amazing. That was after. Now we'd just done the treble the day before. Uh-huh. And I was sharing the dressing room with all my heroes. It was incredible.
Brilliant, incredible. Eh? Did you play when you were younger?
I did play.
What position? Goalie?
Midfield.
Oh, you midfielder?
I was quite friendly with Big Stuart Kerr.
Right,
Big Stuart, but he played centre midfield.
You're probably better than he was.
Big Stuart, he was centre midfield and I played, but there was two things that stood out. Two things that I can remember playing. I think it was Cameron's Neath and Colts. We played Hutchison Vale.
Right, for Edinburgh.
They're a massive team, aren't they? They must still be a big team now. Now, we'd won ball between the 15s, and they came out with the bags, their own bags, they had a ball each. They had their suits or whatever it was on. Oh, I think they beat us about 15-0. So I was about 10 or 11 there, and I'm thinking, oh, is this a level you'd have to get to? And then about 6 months later, I played against Charlie Miller. Somebody says, this young guy's just signed S-forms with Rangers. And I was playing midfield. They says, right, I just want you to stick on him. And oh my God, the whistle went. Then I didn't see him for the rest of the game. he was that good. So they two things stood out that I would never have made it.
Any other snooker players any good now?
Some of them. I think Sullivan had trials with Spurs, I think, when he was younger.
Right.
Alfie Burden, a wee bit lower down the ranks. He played with Arsenal, I think. He played with guys like Ashley Cole and Lampard and things.
Big Stephen Lee must be some going, eh?
No, I wouldn't say that.
First non-football player we've had on.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm honoured. I'm a big fan, Simon.
Thanks very much, mate. Big fan. I'm hoping Avista as well, we can bring back Big Break. Fancy it. You can be Virgo, I'll be Jim Davidson.
No worries, you look a wee bit like Jim Davidson, aye. I'm maybe a wee bit like Virgo, maybe put a beard on, I'll be
all right. But we'll get a Glasgow version.
Glasgow,
so you
man.
Just go a bit leather and get all the snooker queue. Right, mate, we'll start. Faye Wishaw.
Yes.
So did the snooker queue start as a chub first and then?
Aye, you'd handle yourself a wee bit and
Wishaw. How did you get into snookers though? Because it's so...
It was just a local club opened up. My old man used to work offshore and he came home and it was an ex-professional, a guy, Jim Donnelly. He had the club, I think he was in partnership with someone. And snooker at that time, what age? I was about 10, so it would have been 1984, 85. I had a 6 foot table when I was about 7 or 8, me and my older brother, Jason. But the club opened up, cracking club, went down, got the membership. And it was perfect for my old man because like he's working 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. He used to go down when they come back for the rigs, go down for a few pints most nights and put me and Jason on the table. We'd play for a few hours and that was great.
He's not after old dad, is he?
What's that?
He's not after
no,
old dad.
No, he's away now. He's passed away now, my dad, a few years ago. But he went down and aye.
So was he into the snooker as well?
No. I think my grandad used to be good at billiards. I think that's what the old story tells us. But my dad wasn't any good. It was just, as I said, it was just locked and we went down and I loved the game. Two loved it.
How soon could you tell that you were good at it?
Well, I was pretty decent, but I was staying at the same level. Probably the same at football. If you never play with better players, you maybe stay at the same level. So me and my older brother, we were winning a lot of the junior tournaments and a lot of the club championships. But when we were getting into the Scottish junior tournaments and the Scottish championships, we were coming up short because all the guys from Glasgow and Edinburgh, they were all bouncing off each other, playing with each other. And we were always getting to a point but never getting any further. And I think it got to the time when I was about 14 or 15. My old man, he could see I was trying my bollocks off, but I just wasn't getting it. And he said to big Tommy Heenan, he used to own the Masters at Denison, and that's where a lot of the best players used to play. He says, look, Tommy, any chance John could come in and do any odd jobs and now return for free time and play with the rest of the boys? And big Tommy says, aye. During the summer holidays, he said, if he comes in, brushes the 31 tables every morning, stocks a bar, he says he can go in and play for the rest of the day. So that's what I done.
So proper apprenticeship,
aye, first couple of weeks, I was brushing the 31 tables. He must have been looking, but after a wee while, I brushed about 5 or 6. And then went down to the bar, stocked up the bar, but then... come back up. So I was in there for about 9 every morning
and then finished doing all the work at about 12, and then I could play all day. And that was amazing. I was playing with Alan McManus. He was just turning professional at that time. And then I was playing with all the top amateurs in Scotland. And within about 6 months, I couldn't see I was getting better, but everybody else could see I was getting better. And then I was entering like big pro-ams, and I was winning like some big pro-ams at that time.
There must have been a few characters in that place in Dennis.
Amazing. Aye, amazing. Well, Big Tommy, I think he used to have a box in here. I think he had plenty of money, and all the guys he knew. It was some upbringing. Now, because you're coming from Wish, and you were a wee bit like a country bumpkin when you come into Glasgow and things, but great people, and that's what you enjoyed. I'm sure I've heard you talking before with some of the other players, and that's what you enjoy. Like, you remember all the young guys or the young people you were playing with. That was your happiest times, probably, playing snooker. Whereas now, when you're playing and there's pressure on you, you've got to do this, got to do that. But back then, the times you could play for 24 hours and you didn't realise you were doing it.
Who was your heroes growing up? Did you hate snooker heroes, or was it more football heroes you had?
Well, my football hero was Paul McStay. He was amazing. He was my hero.
Willie McStay, now?
Raymond. Then it was Willie. But Paul McStay. Me and my older brother Jason were lucky because my uncle Matt, he was for Kearney, New Jersey. See where The Sopranos was filmed and things.
Canada. How good's that?
Honestly, like, see, my wee brother, Joey, true story, he went over and he was staying with Manty Francis for a couple of weeks. And Manty Francis and Uncle Matt, he says, are we down to the Scottish Butchers and get some square sausage? Because he'd done the square sausage. So Joe and his mate was over. You'll probably know him, Matt McCormick, used to play with Livingston. Don't know if you'll
know
him. He used to play with Livingston. They were over there, and so they went away down to the Scottish Butchers and tried to walk in the door, and there was camera crews and everything there, and they're like, what do you want? And they're like, is this the butcher, Scottish Butchers? He says, no, we're taking over this just now. We're doing a new pilot for a show. My brother was like, what's the show? And they say, Sopranos.
No,
it was in that Satriales. See
Satriales?
That was actually a Scottish Butcher. So my brother and that came out, and then went back to Manty Francis. He said, I couldn't get the square sausage. It was taken over by a camera crew. Wow. And ever since then, my brother came back and says, aye, Sopranos. And then, it's the best show that's ever been on the telly.
You'd rather you went to the Bad of Bingtho, wouldn't you?
Well, we could have been living in America, me and the family, because my dad, he was younger. He married my mum, and as soon as he married my mum, they moved to London. And they stayed in London for a couple of years. And then Manny Francis says, why don't you come over to New York? They had no kids, no ties. And they went away over to New York, and they stayed for about 18 months, loved it over there, and then they get...
Old visa.
The old visa problems, they get deported out of it, but...
So, when you were in Scotland, I know your brother's a big Celtic fan as well. While you were practising snooker, would you still get to Celtic games?
Aye, well, it got to that point. I touched on it earlier on there with my big brother Jason. He was a great snooker player as well, but he got to the age, he was about 15, 16, he was leaving school, and he was going to work. And if it was a toss-up between going to a snooker tournament or an Old Firm game or a Celtic game, he was going to Celtic games. So, just show you the sliding door moment. But at that age, I was still only about 13, so I was still mad on snooker and things. But no, I was beginning to go to some of the games. He would take me to some of the games. And then obviously it was running out of time. It was coming up to the centenary year, wasn't it? Now I was 13 then, and they were the games that I really remember the most.
Uh-huh. Who was your brother's hero, Frank McAvaney?
Oh, it used to be Mo Johnson.
Oh, was it?
It used to be Mo Johnson, and then there's a funny story here. Because obviously, Jason at that time, he was still playing snooker, partnered Mo Johnson at a charity snooker match against the late Davy Cooper and another player, another Scottish like amateur. Mm. And they were playing before the main event, which was Steve Davis and Stephen Hendry. Steve Davis and Stephen Hendry done a tour years ago when Hendry was just young, and that probably catapulted Hendry to be the player he was, because he could probably see what he had to do to get better than Steve Davis. So Jason and Mo Johnson were on before it against Davy Cooper. So Mo Johnson that day was, Celtic were 1-0 down to Kilmarnock, and they come back and won 2-1. And same thing again, they were 1-0 down to Davy Cooper and his partner, and Jason and Mo Johnson come back and won 2-1. So Mo Johnson was a hero. And then it transpired then when he came back, and then he went to Rangers. I was in the house, and Jason's come running in from high school. He's ran right up the stair, and he's got all his pictures with Mo Johnson started. Sisters through them. My mum had all the Pride of Place pictures as well, like with our sons with the snooker things. He's taking them out, he's ripping them. My mum's like, what are you doing, Jason? Ah, bloody hate him. And he ruined all the pictures. He's not got one memory because he ripped them up.
The things football does to you.
That's amazing.
It's
crazy. There you go.
But you turned pro in 1992.
Aye.
How did that come about? Great feeling as well?
It did, aye, because as I said, like, I turned professional about 18 months after I moved into Glasgow. And the way it worked out, if you'd have said to me 18 months before, there was no way I'd have been ready to be a professional. But within that 18 months, for the 6 months that I was playing with Alan McManus, I just get better. Now, like, basically, as I said, overnight. Mm. And then I went down and I competed in a World Under 16 event down in Birmingham. It was a junior section. It was like a Wimbledon. It was on the TV. Jimmy White won the men's. Steve Davis and someone else won the doubles, and I won the junior. I think I beat Ronnie in the semis. And when I beat him, he started crying with his dad.
Did he?
And then I played Mark Williams in the final. I beat Mark Williams 6-1. So, but the junior section finished like a week before the main event. So, as I said, Big Tommy, who was looking after me at the time, now he was the manager of Alan, he was beginning to look after me. He says, oh, you've got to go back up and play some junior events. I says, right, I'll go back up. But he says, I'll take you back down so you get your trophy. You're going to be in front of millions all over Eurosport and things. So I says, right, no bother. So I've come back up, played in the junior tournaments. And then I was wanting to lift back down to Birmingham. And I says, where's Big Tommy? And he was away. He was on the drink for about 2 or 3 days. And no lift back down to get my trophy. Something. But then one of Tommy's mates says, I'll drive you down. But it was last minute. I've drove away down. And the ceremony was finished. Jimmy White had got his trophy. And Gary Lineker was giving out all the trophies. And I got a picture with Gary Lineker, but I was an hour and a half late. Everything was finished up, and that was one of the things. But then, as you said, I turned professional about 6 months after I won that tournament. Ian Doyle, who was Stephen Henry's manager, he came to my dad and everything, saying, look, is there any chance I want to take young John over? He's got potential and things. But I didn't want to go with him. I was quite happy in Glasgow with Big Tommy and playing with Alan.
Was Tommy devastated?
He was a bit, but... My mum and dad were right. Big gentleman, but he probably couldn't be trusted. I don't mean trusted. You couldn't rely on him because he'd maybe other things going on in his life. Mm-hmm. So he says, Ian Doyle says, I'll take John under my wing. He can play with Stephen Hendry. And I didn't want to go. I'm saying, Mum and Dad, I'm not going to Stirling. I don't want to go. But they talked me around. And then the big thing was, if you come up to Stirling, you can practice with Stephen Hendry. And I says, well, God, I can't miss out on that chance. Mm-hmm. That if I can go up there most days, I can be in the same room as him, never mind practice with him. And then when I went up there, luckily enough, he maybe took a bit of shine to me. And most days I was practicing with him. And then within the space of a year, I got better that I could probably turn professional.
When did you get the first Matalan suit for the tournament?
It was.
Is that not a pain in the ass at the time?
No, it was. Manny Gracie used to make all my suits. She was great on the old seamstress or something. So aye, so she used to make all my suits.
See, just on Stephen Hendry.
Aye.
How good was he when you first started?
Ah, he's amazing. Aye. Well, I mean, arguably now they're saying, because Ronnie O'Sullivan's in the conversation now, that the two of them are the best players that's ever lived, probably along with Steve Davis also. But I was just a winning machine, total. Used to be in the club 9:30 every morning and would leave at 5 o'clock. And it wouldn't matter, he could have won a massive championship on the Sunday night and then he'd be in first thing in the Monday morning practicing, yeah. Which I thought was mental, mm-hmm. Because it's later on in life and I've done a few things, won a few things. I think you've got to enjoy it.
Like get steaming, you're saying.
if you don't enjoy it, now what's it all for? And I think maybe he could maybe sit back now and I don't know if he'd have any regrets. He could have maybe enjoyed it a wee bit longer, and his maybe career would have lasted. But listen, he's still won the most tournaments probably out of everyone.
That's so. What I was going to ask. Can you get a laugh at him because he looks like he watches Peter Ebdon safety shots to get his kicks? But can you get a laugh at him?
He's all right. Aye, Stephen. I mean, I was never really really close with him. Now, because he was like sort of a different era in a way. He was he was running about with your Willie Thorns and people like that, whereas I was younger and things, but no, he was tight. Aye, like you, there was this one story tell you that me, him, used to be a player, Billy Snadden, a top Scottish professional. And if you're playing together and you say, oh, do you want a drink? You go and get three cans of Iron Brew, and then it's your turn, you want a drink? So he didn't want one this day. So I says, well, I'll just put it in the fridge for you. So three cans of Iron Brew, and I says to Julie behind the bar, just put a can for Stephen in the fridge for him. So he was leaving about half an hour later, and he's went up to Julie, says, did John leave a drink for me now in the fridge? And Julie was like, aye. He says, well, can you give me the 30 pence? Because I want to put it in the jelly bean machine to get jelly beans on the way up the road to Dr. Arthur. She's like, are you kidding me on? He says, no, give me the 30 pence. She's got the 30 pence, put it in the jelly bean machine, and drove home.
And left Iron Brew?
Left Iron
Brew. Oh, man. So, see, when you turn pro, is that the end of going to the football then? Is it constant?
No, that's what I mean. That's what I've always done throughout my whole career.
Got to a social life as well.
Aye. Now, 17, 18, that was 92, 93. That was in the middle of the nine in a row, wasn't it, for Rangers. So
how tough was that as a fan?
It was tough because obviously you had the centenary year and then you had the Scottish Cup against Rangers the following year, 89. But Rangers, they were just spending too much money, weren't they? And Celtic, I don't know if you say it too loud in here, you had the Whites and the Kellys and things, they weren't really interested in spending money. But you still had a great laugh. Now, you were growing up and it was as if it brought a wee bit of solidarity or camaraderie when you got up in the bus and when you knew you probably weren't going to win the league. But obviously that makes the good times sweeter. But no, I was going a lot and sometimes it got in the middle of your snooker because you were wanting to enjoy yourself and, mm-hmm. and do what your other mates were doing, but you had to screw the knot.
Could you still do that? Could you still get a drink on the bus and that?
Oh, aye, plenty of times. Wee sneaky ones and that up the bus. I've never really changed now. Uh-huh. No.
What team does Hendry support?
That's meant to be Hearts, isn't it? He's old man, God rest him. Now, he was a big Hearts fan, but I don't think Hendry was. I think he's running about with John Terry and people like that down in London now. I think he lives down there, yeah, so I think he's a Chelsea fan or something now, so aye. But I think he liked Hearts, but obviously they were never doing anything.
So could we just get a laugh about football, was it?
Not really with Henry, no. It was mostly with me, Graham Daughter, or Billy Snadden. He was a Scottish professional right into Rangers at the time, so it was mostly that.
Must have been tough for you going in.
It was tough, aye. But aye, you still got a smell on your face. Uh-huh.
See what I wanted to ask you? The old 147? See, when you get the first one, is it like losing your virginity?
Simon, I hope no, because I didn't get married when I was 23. honest to God, now, you wouldn't believe it. I was a world champion and I'd never done a 147. Now, that's when I tell people that, when I tell other players, they're like, no, you're kidding me on. Now, there's players that have done 147s when they're 14, 15. There's guys in China doing 147s at 11 and 12. I hadn't done one and I was a world champion. Wow. I just never really went for them in practice. I'd be a born sod or something. I was just always interested in winning frames. And then I think the first 147 I ever got was on the TV, and it was against Dennis Taylor. Uh-huh. And it was a charity challenge. No, it was a team event, sorry. I was playing for Scotland, he was playing for Northern Ireland. That was the first time I'd ever done 147. And I'd been world champion 2 years earlier.
Uh-huh. Is the feeling amazing to her?
It was brilliant, aye, because my brother was there and a couple of my mates, they came down to Reading. It was brilliant, but I didn't know what to do because I won 20,000, so I didn't know if I had to share
but
it. With, I didn't know if I had to share it with the team or it was just a single prize, though. I mean, but I just kept
I'll
it,
tell so. You who wouldn't have shared it. Stephen Hendry. You won your first tournament 19, 1994. Aye. Do you feel your life changed after that?
In the snooker sense, aye. Now, I remember that about a month earlier, I'd played in Dubai Duty Free Masters, and I was still with Ian Doyle, who was my manager at the time. I'd been with him for about 18 months. And I beat Steve Davis in the first round over there. And as soon as I come off the table, you know, I was beat my hero. And I'm walking off and I'm thinking, Ian Doyle, my manager's there. He's going to say, what a result for you, son. And the first thing he said was, what a result that is for Stephen Hendry. because him and Steve Davis were vying for number one and number two. He says, what a result that is for Stephen. So there and then, that just something in my head just went like, right, I just need to get rid of this guy. I just need to go on my own. Just so later on that tournament, I lost to Ronnie O'Sullivan. He beat me 5-0 the next event. My head was wasted. And I says to Doyle, I says, that's us finished. And he always told me, he says, listen, if anybody ever wants to leave my stable, you can leave. Just walk away, no bad feelings. So I waited, there was a few guys about, a few other players, and I says, right, Ian, we're finished. He's like, no, you're not finished, you're not leaving now, we'll go places together. I says, we're finished. I says, I'm going out moaning. No, I says, you shake my hand. I says, shake my hand in front of all these players because we're finished. As soon as we go home, finito. And he wouldn't shake my hand because he maybe knew that I was maybe next coming through to be a decent player. And I shook it. I says, that's us, we're finished. As soon as we go home, my dad will be up to tear up my contract. Sure enough, we got home. They tried to give us an old contract. That's how shady he was. And my dad says, no, I want the new contract out. So I ripped it up. And then a month later, I went down and won my first tournament. It was as if maybe a weight had been lifted. As if, because I always knew that if I stayed in that stable, because Stephen was number one in the world at the time, I was always going to be number two. There was no way that I would ever have been able to come through to be my own man. So I says, that's us finished. And then, as you say, a month later, I went down and won my first tournament.
That's quite a strong mentality at such a young age, eh?
Something just snapped, and I just felt as if, well, I'll never be now number one player in the world if I stay in this environment. So I say, right, that's us, we're finished.
See, when you beat like a Davis, is it like a Motherwell playing Celtic and Rangers?
Oh, it was incredible. The first time, I think that was the second time I'd played him. The first time I played him at the Scottish Masters at Motherwell, and I got a wild card in to play him. And all I'd done was just sit and look at him. He was just walking around the table, and I was just looking at him saying, I don't believe I'm actually here playing my hero. And there's no chance I had of winning. But then the second time, obviously you think, right, well, you've experienced that, you've got to try and block that out and try your best and try and beat your heroes, and then luckily I done it.
How would the older guy, because I always get slaughtered for asking this, but how would the older guys, were you as a young player, would they try and intimidate you or would they help you?
No, most of them would try and intimidate you a wee bit. Most of them would, aye.
So it's a ruthless business, isn't it?
Aye, ruthless, because you're out there fighting for it. It's not a team event like yourself. It's ruthless and always another story.
Go for it, mate, we love stories.
No, but Jimmy White, legend, and he was one of the first guys that ever come up to me. Now, I'm surprised he knew my name. He says, all right, John, I've heard you're a good player. Now, stick in, you'll go far, blah, blah, blah. But I just lost to Jimmy in the quarterfinals of the British Open. And I thought I'd acquitted myself quite well. That was my first year. And then Alex Higgins came walking towards me, and I'm thinking, God, Alex Higgins, another one of your heroes. He's maybe going to say the same thing. And he came up and shook my hand, and he says, listen to me, man, there'll only ever be one Higgins in this game. That's what he said. That's what he said. And I just stood there, I'm like, I don't know, what do you mean? And he says, just you remember that, and just walked away. Oh, he maybe had a few drinks in it, but with him after saying that, obviously my dad, he wasn't one of my dad's favourite guys, right? So it was about a year later, and Higgins was beginning to go in the downward spiral. He was losing a lot, and he was drinking maybe a lot of tournaments, and he was always in a bad mood. And one morning I woke up, and the wee guy came to my door, and he'd like a beautiful blue suit, three-piece suit, and he said, from the old Hurricane to the young Hurricane. I'm thinking, who's this? A Louis Copeland suit, a guy from Dublin, he was a right top suit maker. So I'm thinking, why is Alex Higgins giving me a suit? No, I'm friendly or whatever. So I went down to breakfast, and I'm sitting there, and my dad, now I can see he'd had a couple of drinks the night before. I'm like, you don't got to believe Alex Higgins gave me a beautiful suit. He says, oh, did he, aye? I says, well, what's all that about? He says, ah, well, I was a wee bit in the barn last night. I says, well, what happened? He says, Higgins was thrown out. He was wanting to play a challenge match for 30 grand. Now, and I just told him, look, John's no go at 30 grand, but if I could get it, he'll play you tomorrow. And then there was a bit of tournament. I says, oh, Dad, you didn't do that, did you? He says, no. He says, there's no way he's saying that about you, sir. So that was maybe why Higgins has maybe woke up in the morning and he's maybe thought, now, what have I done last night? Try to challenge young John or something, and he's maybe done it as like a piece of him, as if to say, listen, sorry about last night. So
you're old, damn it, eh?
I know, that's it.
Old as brass, love it. See, the big players, though, like, was it sort of a similar lifestyle of football players? Did like birds love them and that with you all the time?
Oh, that's the thing which nowadays I think you. I mean, I still practice a hell of a lot, and when I go to tournaments, I'm 43, but I still feel as if I play well and put the work in, I can still be a top player. A lot of the players, when they got to that age, they were finished in a way, because right. We were coming through, we were hungry, and we were knocking them over pretty easily, mm-hmm. and they never had much resistance against us. Right. But bearing in mind, guys like Dennis Taylor, your Cliff Thorburns, they maybe didn't start playing snooker till they were 25, 30. So as we've been playing it since we were 10 years old, so we were like sharp and ready to play all these guys. But it was probably tougher for them because they didn't have as many tournaments to play in. But their big social scene was because they'd done a lot of exhibitions and things.
Right.
So
they hung about there.
That's where they made their money. They'd pop black, they'd the World Championship, they'd the UK Championship. But it was amazing just being round about these guys like Tony Knowles. Like, I don't know, Tony Knowles took a shite to me. So some nights we were sitting there and having a couple of drinks and I'm asking him like about the Page 3 models and that he was with, and he was the most boring guy ever. All he wanted to do was talk about snooker. All he wanted to do was just tell me how he screwed back to do this and do that.
And I'm
saying, what was it like in the 80s when you were the pin-up? And he's like, never mind about that, son. Now we play this shot, you play that shot.
I'm saying,
oh my God.
I've picked the wrong, you know, you're
But no, it was funny.
I love Jimmy White, I think he's a total legend. Is he a joker or is he quite...
Jimmy White now is leading his life the way he should have led it. He's done it back to front now. You see him at tournaments, in cups of tea, going to bed early, and then wakes up in the morning, he's always on the practice table. Yeah. Whereas, well, I don't know what it was like in the 80s, but apparently they just says he wasn't there from the 80s to 90s. He was just too busy at partying with the Rolling Stones. And
was he?
Because his best mate's Ronnie Wood. So,
oh my God, can you sort an interview with him then?
But that was his best mates. And the thing is with Jimmy White, he wouldn't mind me for saying it, but you couldn't go out for a drink with Jimmy because he's one of the, was it the Gullets that he can drink a pint of beer in like 2 seconds?
Just fling it back.
He just flings it back. So you couldn't last.
Right, back to the football. Round about the Tommy Burns era.
Aye.
Were you excited when Tommy took the job?
Brilliant, aye, because he was one of your heroes, wasn't he? Like, as I said, my Uncle Matt, when I went away for that story, but my Uncle Matt was the president of the Celtic Sports Club, so any time the Lisbon Lions or that were going over to America to do functions, a lot of them used to say my Uncle Matt.
Really?
So my Uncle Matt, we used to come over at the Celtic games, his family's from Glasgow also, he knew me and Jason were mad on Celtic, so he brought us in and we got pictures taken with the McStays, Paul and Willie, Mark Reid, Tommy Burns,
wow.
Brian McClare. So it was amazing. Now you were out the front door. So Tommy Burns was one of your heroes, and then when he got the job, you knew he was, God, one of the biggest Celtic men you could ever get. And then the players that he brought in, and he played brilliant, but he was just up against a great Rangers team. You had to hold your hands up, dude. The Loudrop and Gaza and things. Now what a team they
have. Do you like when it's a Celtic man in charge of Celtic?
Aye.
You do?
Aye.
Uh-huh. Why, just because there's an affiliation? Or?
Just, I'm just that type. I just love Scottish players as well. Right. I love, now you see the young Scottish boys coming through, and I love people that have got a connection with the club as well. Mm. That's brilliant for me.
What was your thoughts on Fergus McCann at that time?
Obviously, you didn't know anything about him, but thank God he came out of the doors have been locked now, when you've seen all the scenes and obviously whatever happened with the Kellys and the Whites and things. Now it looked as if the club, although you never thought it could have been down the tubes, but supposedly it was that close to being shutting the doors. Mm-hmm. So thank God he came in. But the thing you were wanting me to try and spend money right away, but as you know, that can be a short term fix. And thank God that he done it in his own way, in his own way, built half of the stadium and gave Tommy some money to spend on some of the players, and then. Obviously he's a saviour, isn't he?
Uh-huh. Who did you enjoy watching for that era? Di Canio, Van Hooydonk, Cadet?
Well, Andy Tom come in first?
Andy Tom, what a player.
What a player he was. Uh-huh. But then obviously the three amigos, wasn't it? They came in, Cadet, Van Hooydonk and Di Canio. Yeah, unbelievable.
Did you have the Di Canio boots by them there?
No, I never had them. But no, it's another story as well that big as I say, big Stuart Kerr, it was pals, and I was down at Kilmarnock the day. I think we were 2-0 down to Kilmarnock, and we come back and won 4-2. So we come back up and the Wish Emerald, the Cross Keys bus, and then a couple of drinks, and then we went up to Big Desi's to get ready. And Big Stuart was pals, and he was coming out for a drink, and he phoned us, and he says, "Oh, I've got somebody that wants to come out tonight. Where are yous?" He says, "Oh, on Desi's." "All right, I'll be there in half an hour." So we're thinking, "Aye, right, no worries." And who's walked in? De Canio.
No way.
He's brought De Canio in with like the skip pack back the front, as if he's
like, is Desi's over, a house? Somebody's house?
Over the top.
Or a pub?
No, it was a house.
Or somebody's house?
Aye, because Big Stuart was pals with Big Des, and he came in, and he went round the room, "Oh, nice to meet you," and everything. And then we went to Hamilton Palace or something.
No chance.
Honestly, he get
told. Did he get a bird?
He get told. He get me or what? He get told. He get told to. "No, you're not getting in without the hat, you know, because he was gone bald, wasn't he?" He says, I need my hat. My hat goes everywhere with me or something." I think the guy says, "All right, you can keep your hat on." But you walk in, as I'm saying, now Stuart Kerr, Celtic goalie, a lot of people are on about him, but when De Canio walked in, God almighty, it was like the Beatles or something.
In the Hamilton Palace.
In the Hamilton Palace, aye.
Wow. Would Stuart Kerr get you all the tickets for the games and that then?
No, I always spent my own money, aye. I've always done that. I used to always sit over at the North Stand when it was built, me and my two brothers. So.
Would you get fans coming up to you all the time at that stage?
You would get some, you know what I mean?
That enjoy that?
Maybe followed the... Aye, okay. You know, obviously. I've never had any... You've had a wee bit of bother in Scotland, but the majority of things, because obviously... I see what footballers go through. It must be torture in Scotland if you play with one of the either side of the Old Firm. It must be torture, but no, I've always.
What are you like as a fan? Do you slaughter boys? You do, didn't you?
I used to slaughter, that's what I'm saying.
Who used to slaughter?
I used to slaughter big little Diddy Aga. I used to just shout, "Run!" Just up that right wing, as if they say, "Run!" But
tactical genius,
then actually, run. When you play out there, I couldn't run half the park.
It's massive, isn't it?
Massive.
You didn't realise,
man. And that's what I've said to some of the, like, remember talking to Simon Doyle and things, and saying, "I can't believe I used to slate that Diddy Aga." But what an engine he must have had on him, the amount of times he got up and down that wing. But no, obviously, we being a sports sort of person, I'd be sitting there while my older brother would be gone mental, you know what I mean?
Did you get to meet Tommy when he was the manager?
Never as a manager.
No.
Never as a manager. I can remember I met him. I came in and I was asked to present Gordon Strachan with remember when, if you win the league, you get the gold ball.
Yeah.
You always played the home games with the gold ball. Yeah. I think you still do it. And Tommy was part of the coaching staff with Gordon Strachan. So I came in and got a couple of pictures taken. I don't think Gordon Strachan knew who I was. So, but then Gordon Strachan says, do you want to come down to Barrowfield and we'll watch the boys train? I says, "Oh, brilliant." So I jumped in the car with him and Tommy and is it Gary Pendry?
Gary Pendry. Tash.
Aye. So we're sitting in the car and driving down, then we get down there. And you could even have been in the squad.
No, did you not have been in the squad?
So it was guys like Mickey Day and Big Steve McManus, and they were all like training. They trained for about an hour and a half, and then they all jumped in their cars and come back. And they were having lunch, and I'm sitting there. And they says, "Oh, I've just got my lunch with the boys and things," but obviously you're shy and things. And then I was talking to some of them, saying he's going back out to train. He says, "No, that's us finished." And I'm saying, "What?" He says, "Aye, that's us finished now. Just a wee recovery day."
Lazy bastards.
Now, but I'm thinking to myself, I'm in flexing my nuts off for like 5 or 6 hours. And they're going down and maybe an hour running about the park. But obviously, I understand that there's things, you're maybe playing a match and you've got to watch what you're doing. But. Mm-hmm. I thought only doing that for an hour. But
How was Tommy's partner on it? Good.
Oh, he was just slaughtering Gordon Strachan and Gary Pendry. he was just slaughtering them in the car. And I think that was at the time. God rest him. I think there was stuff coming out in the press or whatever. But he just didn't look. He just looked the same, and he was having a laugh with everybody. And he would have been brilliant to be working under.
It must have been some day for the Scottish Cup final 1995 when Tommy got his first trophy.
Aye. Now, you were delighted, obviously, for something like Tommy Burns. But for him, he only got one trophy. But to be Scottish Cup, which I suppose is synonymous with Celtic, that and Dick Hoy don't score the winner, you'd have loved him to get more, wouldn't you? But, but at least he won.
Would that have been the best footballing-wise team that you've seen at Celtic?
No. Well,
Oh, it's a tough. No, but the best football team for me would be obviously under Martin O'Neill. You know what I mean? Right. That would have been the best for you. Your Lennons and your Suttons and Larsons and things. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? They were brilliant individually, I think, like Cadet and Tom and Hoydonk and things, but I think just as a unit, that Celtic team, aye, that would probably be the best.
Right, we'll come to that team, mate. 1998, you won your first World Championship in Celtic's top 10 in a row. Best year of your life?
Probably, aye. Probably.
How was that week? Was that within a week?
Well, I was playing in the final, the first day in the World Championship against Ken Doherty. I think it was, and Celtic were away to Dunfermline. And Celtic were 1-0 up. And then I think Dunfermline scored in the last, was it the last?
What was the last 10 minutes?
Falconbridge or something. So I think my two brothers travelled down after that game for my game. So happy days, I've won the world title. Then,
played in the world title there, by the way. Happy days, I've won the world title.
No, that was obviously the biggest thing you've ever done as a player. It would be your first one doing it. Ken Doherty in the final, defending champion. He was looking to win it back to back. I don't think it had ever been done before by a first-time champion. Right. He would have broke that curse. But I won 18-12, so come back up the road in the party mode.
Drove back up the road?
I drove back up. The final would finish on the Monday, so come back up on the Tuesday, and obviously you had a lot of things to do, like the press were maybe asking you to do a lot of things. So it got to around about the Thursday, and I was in my big brother's flat having a beer, and Stuart Kerr phoned. He says, "Where are you?" I says, "I'm just doing an old Jason's." He says, "Oh, I'll come up. I need to ask you something." I says, "Aye." So he came in, and he says, "Somebody within Celtic Park found out that I'm quite friendly with you. Would you come in and parade the trophy?" I says, "What?" He says, "Would you come in and parade the trophy on the Saturday?" I says, "I can't." I says, I'm away down to play, I think I was playing Ken Doherty in a league match. Barry Hearn used to run tournaments out with World Snooker, Matchroom League. I says, "I can't, I'm playing." Jason's big brother's like, "Aye, you're going to do it." I says, "I can't." I says, "I've signed the contract, I've got to go down." And I was playing somewhere, the bottom of England, the tip of England, Exeter or something. I says, "Jason, I can." He says, "Aye, you can." So he's picked the phone up and he's got through to the matchroom offices. And it was Sean Totley. Hi, Sean. I had the number for Sean. "It's Jason Higgins here, Sean. Just to let you know, John's meant to be playing on Saturday, but he can't make it because you probably don't realise up here Celtic are maybe just ready to just win a historic league football. This is Sean Totley. What are you talking about, Jason? So just to let you know, you'll have to go on the phone to Barry Hearn and let him know John can't make it. John will play two matches on the Sunday because I was playing one game on the Saturday, one on the Sunday. Sean's like, no, there's no way Barry will go with that. But Jason says, well, tough. He's going to have to go for it. So just phone Barry and this is my number. Get back to me in 10 minutes. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? So sure enough, the phone went 10 minutes later, Barry Hearn, he's on the phone to your Jason, you know. What are you talking about, Jason? That can't happen. Who are you anyway? Are you John's brother? Put John on. No, he's like, no, John's not here, but my dad's away. Anyway, he's not going. So John will play two games on the Sunday. Barry's like, no, it won't happen. He'll be in breach of contract. And Jason says, well, tough. He's a world champion and he's been asked to do this. This could be like a childhood dream. It'll never happen again for the rest of his life. So tough, he's not coming in the Saturday, so it's up to you, Barry. So Barry Hearn says, right, I'll ring you back. Sure enough, half an hour later he went like that. He says, right, his game's changed to Sunday. He'll have to play two matches on the Sunday. So I was like, happy days. So Stuart Kerr went and sorted it out. I came in with the trophy in the boardroom. Billy Connolly's here.
Wow.
Now your hero's again, Billy Connolly's here. And he's come right up. Me and my wee brother Joe were there. He's come right up. He says, John, he says, I don't know if somebody said to him, that's that young boy that won the world title. But he came right up. He says, I'm filming a show over here. I was glued to it. He says, I loved it. He says, oh, you're a good Celtic man as well. Brilliant. Fantastic. I'm just standing there open mouth.
Oh,
Billy Connolly. And then Fergus McCann's walked over.
The Billy Connolly, he's dressed and like he's got a pair of sandals on, like a pair of shorts or something. And Fergus McCann overslagging him off about what he's wearing. He's like, Billy, I don't think this is the sort of attire you should have in the boardroom. He's trying to like say Billy Connolly. Billy Connolly's like, well, sorry, Fergus, this is the way I am. So you either like it or you lump it. And he just walked away. So me and my wee brother Joe were just saying,
that's amazing.
This can't get any better this day. And then obviously Larson scores. But then there's a couple of chances. Georgia Boyle, I can always remember.
St Johnston, weren't
it? Aye, flashing a header over. And them and Blackback scored that second goal. I was in the main stand there. It was just elation. And then come down the stair and seen Murdo McLeod. And Murdo McLeod's like, ah, going in and say well done to the boys. I'm like, ah, what? He says, going in. He says, they're all in there. They've got champagne going. They'll give you some. I'm like, so I've walked in. And then... like a lot of the Scottish boys now obviously maybe knew you, but the Scandinavians, Blackback, Mark Reaper, things like that, they're like, who's this guy coming in the dressing room?
And I'm just that,
I'm jumping about with them, you know what I mean? it was incredible. A day I'll never ever forget. But the sad thing was, as soon as it finished, my old man was here and we had to drive down to Exeter. Now my two brothers, they're at the Gallagher, they're just party, so everybody's going mental and I'm in a car driving down to Lockerbie away, doing the M6. Couldn't get a flight that night down to this place because it was on first thing in the morning, but I couldn't have missed that.
How was it? How was the nerves walking out to parade it?
Oh, your legs were jelly and walking out, and then the reception I think I got was, now I can remember now, they were all clapping. I'm thinking they'd be too nervous because, God, they're 45 minutes away if you stop and turn the road, but I got some reception, but a day I never forget that day.
Some week. See, just on the World Championship, going into the final, are you kind of guy that gets nervous for matches?
See that? No, actually, I was so confident. I was so confident I was going to win.
Because you beat some good Parrott, O'Sullivan.
Aye, I beat John Parrott in the quarterfinals at 13-11, I think it was. And then I beat Ronnie. I beat him like 17-9 or something in the semis. And then when I was going in against Ken, I just really felt as if I was going to win. I don't know why, but I just felt as if the way I was playing, I really fancied winning, and sure enough.
Is it the best feeling of it?
Okay, it was great. And then your family and friends were there, and then the party and that after in the hotel, like, I think there was like two busloads for Wisher come down, and okay, unbelievable.
Does other players party when you've won a World Championship? Is there anyone that you're particularly pally with that?
No, because they're basically all way home. So it's basically just the two players and their families and friends. And then the thing is with Ken, I'll probably tell you a story later on, that I go on good with Ken, and his friends and family, they were partying with us as well, and it'd be the same about, if he'd have won, I'm sure we would have all been the same, just partying as well. So it was great night.
I was just going to ask you about some of the boys that you play against, but first I get slotted to my banter, but I actually model it on one of your callings. I'll give you one guess.
Neil Robertson.
Hazel Irvine.
Oh, she's great.
She's brilliant.
She's brilliant.
She's great on the telly. No, but Ronnie O'Sullivan, you and him are my favourite players. Love him. He's a character.
I mean, as I said earlier on, he's vying with Henry. He's in my eyes, he's went beyond Henry just for his longevity and just how good a player he is. Mm-hmm. He's.
Does he not give a no?
He does, aye, he does. He's crazy. He is crazy.
Is he crazy? But yeah.
I've always got on great with him. I've turned professional with him when I was 15, 16, and we've always had a sort of mutual respect, I think, with each other, you know what I mean? But he's off his head. Mm-hmm. Aye, he's off his head. Like, talking about football and that, like, when I first met him, he was a Spurs fan. And then I think he got friendly, he was running about Ian Wright, and then he was an Arsenal fan. And then I think he was living in Liverpool for a wee while and he was running about with Robbie Fowler and then he was a Liverpool fan. So he was just one of these guys that I think whatever day he wakes up, he just does his own thing. But natural and genius, whatever you want to say, he's incredible.
What, the old left-handed thing, can you do that as well?
No chance. He can make maximums left-handed.
Is that just he's just born with that drink, or does he?
No, he had to practice that. I think someone told me he was in the club like 4 and 5 hours a day, like for about 2 months, practicing left-handed.
Mm-hmm. So, crazy, eh?
And what an advantage it is when you're out there on the table if you can get down left-handed. But if you to watch snooker nowadays, a lot of the young guys coming through, they can all play left-handed because they all want to try to copy their heroes and hero Ronnie O'Sullivan, and they all practice left-handed, and a lot of them are all great left-handed.
Here's a question for you. What's a harder opponent, Ronnie O'Sullivan at his peak or Stephen Hendry at his peak? It's a great question.
That is a great question. I would always just say Ronnie, because I think when I used to play Hendry, Hendry would always probably feel as if he could beat me, because he's seen me coming through as a young boy, and he was maybe under a wee bit of pressure, because as if to say, although he was the number one player in the world, certainly he's saying I'm the number one player in Scotland. So he would never play his best against me. It was as if, and I would never really play great against Stephen, because I probably looked up to him too much, right, and I held him in such a high regard that I never played well against him either. But I've played a Sullivan, and there's been some times, I think it's like you're playing a computer. I played him once in the Masters final in London. He beat me 10-2 or 10-3, and I said to him after, I said, I thought I was playing the PlayStation there. He was just that good.
Does he have a bit of a laugh at how good he is?
He will laugh. No, he's like, yeah, you're off your head, you're not turning out. he's one guy that for all the talent and things he's got, I don't think he really believes in himself that much.
Right.
I think you'd maybe get that way. I don't know, a lot of sportsmen that they maybe talk a good game, but deep down they're not that confident. Uh-huh. But Sullivan, no, he would never. He would never. No, but he was brilliant.
Another guy I love, he just won the World Championship. He's just like your mad uncle who's good at snooker, Mark Williams.
Aye, Mark.
He's always out boozing and just putting pictures up. He's brilliant, isn't he?
Mark, me and him, being honest, we never really clicked a lot when we were younger. Now, because, as I said again, we're rivals. Now, he's going for tournaments I'm going for, and we just never really got on. Plus, he was under Ian Doyle's wing with Stephen Hendry at the time,
right,
and I was out with that, and you could always sense that they were a team, and yeah, you play that Higgins the next time, get into him.
I never thought snooker would be like that.
I know, it used to be, obviously you had Barry Hearn with the Matchroom team and things, but then when Ian Doyle came through, he had so many players. But when you're younger, as I said, you can't be friends with everybody, but respected him, what a player. Mm-hmm. Now, up there, top, what, four players in the world, five players ever, Mark Williams.
Is he jinxed on him?
Ah, without a doubt. Oh, aye. Without a doubt. Aye. And then he came back, obviously, and beat me in the world final last year, aye. And then this year, apparently, aye, he's been on party mode, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I don't go on social media and things like that, but apparently he's never been off a drink since he won.
How hard's a loss in a world final? Do you take it quite bad?
Aye, well, I've...
Do you not speak to the missus and kids for a bit? Or?
Nah, nothing like that, because they come down, you can see how heartbroken they are as well for you, but that's the last two finals I've lost in, and it has knocked a bit of the stuffing out of you, because you're so close to maybe getting to five world titles or something, and in the last two finals you haven't, so much so this year, basically, God, I've not competed at all, really, this year. It's been a bit of a sickener, but you need to try and go over that.
Is the mental side the same as fit? Is it a mental thing in the snooker?
It's all mental. You can't really say it's physical, can you?
but talent, you know what I mean?
Listen, there's so many talented players over the years, and they've just never made that step to be like a serial winner or a world champion or a UK champion or things. Everybody's got so much talent. When you're practicing backstage, you're thinking, God, how is he not winning more? How is this guy not winning more? How is he not winning more? But it's between the years when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, mm-hmm. and that's what separates maybe the great players for the good players.
See, like losing a world final, aye. Would that have been easier when your dad was around? Would he would be the one that would get you back up and get you back practicing again?
No, really. My dad was never really that side. You see other dads come into the dressing rooms and try to say to their players or whatever. My dad wouldn't know what to say to me. He'd come in and, how are you feeling, son? And I'm like, I'm all right, dad. Right. Just leave me alone, right, okay, just stick in. Now, because you're under pressure, you know yourself. I've never really had a coach or a mentor or anything. So I would just have my own like thoughts and then get back out and try and play. And maybe that's something I would look at. But you obviously miss them that way when you come out and you get beaten, you're devastated, you're going up the road and you're having a wee talk. But
or when you need somebody to batter Alex Higgins.
Aye, that's exactly. Oh, aye, you miss him, of course you do. You miss him all the time.
But see, when you would win world championships, would he be? Would that be the best for him?
Oh, aye, God, you're a dad now yourself. Now and if any of your kids do, like if my kids do acting things and they might be a lead part in a show, you're the proudest guy in the world now. You couldn't wait to tell your pals, oh, my son was the lead part of your show there. Whereas it must have been great for him that he could go down the pub or he could say to his pals now, like his son was a world champion once in his life, you know what I mean? It must have been good.
Amazing. World number one ending Stephen Hendry's 8-year reign. Yep. How did that change? Was everyone desperate to beat you when you're world number one?
No, really. No, it was a big thing, obviously, taking over for Stephen as the number one player. But at that point, I didn't look at myself as if I was number one because I was too busy fighting against guys like Stephen Hendry and Ron O'Sullivan and Mark Williams and great players like Ken Docherty and Alan McManus. And then you'd the young guys coming through, Paul Hunter, Matthew Stevens. Mm-hmm. So you were just too busy trying to play. And then, but as I say, but then you're still wanting to have a life as well, and you're still wanting to go and watch Celtic away at St Johnstone or something, or Aberdeen, or so you to try to have a balance, and that's what I think I've always tried to have. It.
But did other players look at you different? Think that there's a pure aura about you when you were on number one?
I don't know. Honestly,
did any of the younger players ever like come to you for advice?
They do, aye. Now they maybe do, and I feel a wee bit embarrassed. I don't know what it is, because I maybe still think of myself as being young. Obviously, when you look in the mirror,
you're not young, but
you feel a wee bit embarrassed, and some of the young Chinese boys that are coming over, and they've maybe seen you on the computer or on the TV, and they come up and they want to play you, they want to give you a game and ask you certain things, and you can only tell them what you think. So
see, when you're going to places like China, like, what do you do for downtime?
Well, believe it or not, see, the thing is with the football season, it always falls in certain times. Like the semi-final of the Scottish Cup will always fall when I'm down in Sheffield, so I'm watching that when I'm down there. The third Celtic Rangers game always seems to fall when I'm in Beijing, and I'll be going there next month. A funny story, another one, it was a jelly and ice cream game. We're in this pub, the Dubliner or something, in Beijing. There's me, Stephen Maguire, Marcus Campbell, and Graham Dott. The wee Graham never normally likes to watch an all-firm game with him, but he likes to just go away himself, and obviously I don't know what he does in the room himself. The bowler hat and things. But we're sitting, Marcus is like to Graham, come on out, you've got to come out and watch a game. And he's like, no, I don't want it. He said, no, because we've won the league, haven't we? So they're just playing for pride at Ibrox, this game. He says, right, I'll come. But wee Graham doesn't drink. So we're not really drinking, we've got a couple of pints, but we're playing in a couple of days' time. But wee Graham's like, no, I don't like coming out. A lot of people don't like me. And I says, nobody's got to know you in Beijing now. There's a couple of expats, but there's a few Chinese. Sure enough, there's about five or six guys in this our table. What happens? I think Barry Ferguson scored or something. Wee Graham jumps right off the table. Yes! And he's right over at him, and he's doing that at the table, and the six guys have turned around, and they're like, and they've come right out, and Big Marcus, that used to play Big Bear, like, he's like, look, boys, sorry, didn't mean that. Now, look, he's just happy Rangers. Ah, well, tell him to sit down, shut his face. And then he says, no one on there likes you in an all-for-him game zone, because he was right up for it.
Does he love it? Does he love Rangers?
Oh, mental on Rangers.
He's got a good laugh.
Aye, brilliant. Aye, yeah. He goes to all the Rangers games and things, and obviously he's no smiling much now, is he? But he's a big Rangers man. He actually had to move to Larkhall, didn't he? Didn't he feel as if Duke Street or that was
Rangers
like
enough.
Rangers enough, so to move to Larkhall.
Brilliant. See, when you were the world number one, would you start to get pally with Celtic players? Or?
No, honest to God, Simon, if I'd seen Celtic players, I'd just...
Still get starstruck?
Starstruck all the time. No, honest to God. No, and I would always have my own seat, so there's no way I would ever ask. Brothers have asked me, can you not phone Celtic up and get an extra ticket or whatever? And I'd be like, no chance, no. No.
You
get your own seats and things. And.
But you've played a couple of the players, haven't you?
I played some of them. Aye.
Who have you played?
I played Kieran Tierney.
Oh, have you?
Aye, played a couple.
Any
of
good? Days. Rubbish.
He's not great, but I've got a shot in my phone that's one of the best shots you'll ever see. Somebody took it while he was playing me, and well, what a shot it was! Unbelievable. And I've played like Steve McManus.
Remember that? Uh-huh.
Stephen Pearson played a few of them. But as you see, if I seen them now, that would get tongue tied and a bit like your cell of day, Simon. You used to play with Celtic.
What about like the Lambert and Larson era? They were big at the snooker, you know that? They used to play every month.
I didn't know. I'd heard that there was a pool table.
They had a tournament.
And they were meant to play the pool and things.
There's one man I want to see you play at pool, Tommy Gravison.
Tommy Gravison, I've heard your stories, but I'd love to meet him. It was just
through there, the pool table.
Is that right? Yeah.
But if you beat him, you'll headlock me for about 2 hours. Right, the team that you loved, the Martin O'Neill years. Aye. Is that the most exciting period being a Celtic fan? What did you love about them?
They just everything, power, pace, skill. Aye, brilliant.
You like Martin O'Neill as a manager?
Brilliant, aye, brilliant.
Had an aura about him,
didn't he? For that team, he was perfect for them. I know some people can slate him and say he maybe plays the same way, rigid or 3-5-2, or gets the wing backs and big guys in the box and things, but what a team that was.
What some of your best games for the Martin O'Neill? That European Cup run, obviously.
I went to three of the games away. I went to Stuttgart away.
Eh?
I went to Blackburn. I nearly got trampled with a horse now because it was me and my dad. I was actually at a tournament down in Birmingham or something. I travelled up playing at Blackburn that night, and then I travelled back down the next day. I was playing at 11 o'clock the next day. I thought I was playing a donkey and he beat me 5-1. and then went to Liverpool.
Did you go to Liverpool?
That must have been one of the best games I've been.
Are you behind the goal when Hartson scored?
Behind the goal when Thompson's put the free kick underneath the goal, underneath the wall, and then I was right behind the goal where Big Hartson's bulleted it in. It was crazy that night. Brilliant. Then Boa Vista, I think I was down at Sheffield. I just always felt as if we were going to win. Even though you were getting into the last 5 minutes and you hadn't scored, I felt they were a poor team, that Boa Vista. And then I went to Seville. Aye.
Larson scored against Boa Vista, didn't he? Was he your modern day hero, Larson?
No, Big Sutton.
Was it?
Oh, Big Sutton. I love Big Sutton.
Good player, wasn't
he? Oh, Big Sutton.
Could play anywhere.
Centre half. Could play him more time in midfield or up front. He was perfect for
me. You like him on the telly now?
Aye, he's good on the telly. He just does it to wind people up, doesn't he? Some of the things. But, Big Sutton. He was my player on that team. Obviously, you had Lennon and Thompson and Petrov and Mike Namara as well. What a team.
Did you like the European away games? How did you like going to them?
Brilliant, aye.
Atmosphere?
Brilliant, aye.
Was that with your brothers as well?
Aye.
And your brothers still go now, didn't they?
Oh, they still go the now, aye. They're still in Valencia as we speak. Great days.
See, just on the Seville run, was it maybe after the Liverpool game that you thought they could get to the final?
I thought it just depended who we drew. And I thought we drew the best team, Boa Vista. I didn't think they were a great team. But then obviously we drew, obviously, Seville. What a day.
Did you ever think Celtic would, you'd see Celtic in a European final?
Never.
No.
Never.
Any of your dads or grandads at Lisbon?
No. My dad, he wasn't at Lisbon. When we went to Seville, that
How
was great.
The trip?
Brilliant. Started, obviously, we came into Glasgow Airport. And then my dad used to play with Motherwell. My dad was a good player. I left that now. So I'll tell a story now that his best mate growing up was Tommy Gemmell, God rest him. So my dad went for a trial at Fir Park, and Tommy Gemmell was like that to my dad. True story, you know. Can I carry your boots, Higgy, into the ground? And my dad said he had a box. He put the boots in a box. He says, aye, if you want. So my dad went for the trial at Fir Park, and he played a few reserve games. So my dad used to call Tommy Gemmell Hamper Boy, right? He says, oh, Hamper. Now, just obviously, for Craig Newk, he grew up. Now, my dad says, the games they used to have, you'd the Baker twins, Joe Baker, Jerry Baker, and you'd all these different names for that era. He says, what players? But he says, Tommy Gemmell, wasn't he anything special? But he says he was a worker. He'd be doing sprints or the different parts and things, and obviously go to where he was, been a European Cup winner. So we're at the airport, and all the Lisbon Lions, they were at a certain wee bit, but like you'd Willie O'Neill, you'd Big John Hughes, Joe McBride and things. So I was talking away to them and I was telling them, I says, oh, my dad used to play with Gemmell. So they're like, oh, you're joking, where is your dad? So my dad came around, talking away, and my dad's like, aye, Big Gemmell. He says, Hamper Boy. He says, I used to call him Hamper Boy. Right? So as we've left, we flew out and we were staying at Jerez, which was about an hour drive away from Seville. So we were out there for about 2 days. So they were flying out of Jerez as well. So as we've touched in Jerez, every day as you do, you get into the terminal and everybody needs a toilet. So my dad's in there in the toilet. Who comes in? Gemmell, big Tommy Gemmell. Higgy, what were you bloody telling them? That's all I got through that entire flight. Was hampered, boy, hampered.
Brilliant.
True story. He says, what are you worried about? He says, that's me now. See, it doesn't matter what you've done. He says, these guys will never let me forget that. Yeah. Now he's called Tamper Boy. And that's when my dad says, oh, what a player he was. But then, the only Scottish guy that's gone to European Cup finals.
Finals, yeah. They're also humble as well, aren't they?
That's what I mean. Now, when you see them, and that is true, like, for guys like me, when you meet some of these guys, like Bertie Auld, Bobby Lennox, Jimmy Johnson, Billy McNeil, gosh, they are like mythical people to you, because you just seen them on like the black and white film and things.
I seen me 10:30 meeting Ronnie O'Sullivan, that we talk about.
I seen that. I don't think Ronnie knew who Bertie was, you know what I mean, at first, but I certainly knew who he was at the end of it, I think. But
just on the final, what are your memories?
Gutted. Just play acting, I felt. They were a good team, obviously, Porto, then they went on to win the European Cup. But play acting, just heartbroken. And then, obviously, heartbreaking. So it was.
You still hold that against Mourinho?
Oh, nah, that's the way they are, isn't it? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the sort of how they like the Italy and different places in Portugal. Heartbroken after it.
The amount of fans over there was unbelievable, though, wasn't
incredible.
It?
Well, I've come out after the game and I've lost my bra and my dad and my father-in-law, and I thought, I'm never getting the bus back to Jerez here. Because now the amount of buses that were out there, that I says I'm lost now, because it was just buses, and thing. And there's no mobile phones or anything. But luckily enough, I ran out my brother and then we got on the bus back to Jerez. So it was.
Would that have been your best trip following Celtic Seville?
Aye, probably. I think just the whole thing, going to be a European Cup final in the sun, something that you didn't think you'd ever see being a Celtic player, being a Celtic fan. Now the way money was coming into the game, but I think obviously we just get into the end of it, because I think guys, as you say, like Sutton and Lennon and Thompson coming from England, they were good players down there. You know what I mean? There's no way you could get them nowadays, that type of player leaving a club like Chelsea and that to come up here and play. And I think we'd
proper players.
Done well. Aye.
Right, mate, back to the snooker.
Right.
Won your other world championships between 2007-2011. Was that the best period in your career?
Probably, aye.
Why?
Probably. I think maybe just screwing it up more. I think because you're a dad, more responsibilities in snooker. As you were getting to that stage, probably 2007, you're hitting your 30s and you're beginning to say that you might not have now a lot of time left in the game, because supposedly around about your late 30s is the time when you're meant to be going over the hill and past it. So I probably knuckled down probably more than most at that period.
And what, just practice more?
Just practice more, aye.
Where do you practice in the house?
No, I practiced at Denison in Glasgow. I'd moved to different clubs, but I always kept on going back there. That was always like your spiritual home sort of thing, and it was just down the road from Parkhead, wasn't it? So
you treated like a hero when you went in there?
No, nah? the guys were in there would slag you on now, aye, which was great now, because it kept your feet in the ground.
Okay, and last question, your snooker future. Can you get a fifth world championship?
I'd have to be honest and probably say no.
Come on, man.
Because I've been there the last 2 years and I was close. Maybe 2 years ago against Selby was my best chance. I think it was 10-5 up on him. That was maybe my best chance. But who knows?
Do you still sit and think about the defeats now?
No, listen. You win what you win, you lose what you lose. No, I don't look back with regret with anything. No, I don't.
How many more years do you think you had it?
I think I can play for a few more years. I think me and some of the players like Steve Maguire and Anthony McGill, we've just got a new unit in Glasgow that we're going to put our own tables in. And we're going to play with each other, bounce off each other, and get back to the way we used to be in the club environment. And hopefully that can keep you interested for a few years. Aye, so.
Well, I think you'll do it, mate. I think you'll get fine. John, it's been an absolute pleasure.
No,
thanks very much.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on. Thank you.